Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
WGN. Hello. It's Amy Guth in for Brian Noonan. Thanks for being with me today. Here's where everyone clicks away. Oh, Noonan's not here. Oh my gosh. It's Guth. Just kidding. Thanks for staying with us. We have lots to do today. Lots to talk about. Lots of things. We are getting a visit here just on the other side of news. We are going to be talking with author Emily Belden. We have talked to her before about her last book, but her new book is out and it sounds super good. And I cannot wait to talk to her about it. And she's got an update on what has occurred with that first book because there are many things. It has climbed many mountains. So we're going to be talking to her about that. And because it is Earth Day, we're going to be talking about a lot of things related to Earth Day. Including, we're going to be talking with Susan Mudd, who is a senior policy advocate at the Environmental Law and Policy Center right here in Chicago, about a really interesting local aspect of environmental justice. So we're going to be talking about that. But I also want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. I want to hear from you about Earth Day, about all the things on your mind. Give us a call and you will speak with esteemed producer Ben Anderson. That will be the friendly voice on the other end of the phone when you call. Also, there is a story that is driving many people crazy on the internet at the moment. It kind of kicked up over a Cosmo interview, and I want to talk about that because, okay, here's what occurred. Ross Butler, who is on that 13 Reasons Why, let me tell you, I did not know who this man was until today because I'm not a big viewer of things. But nonetheless, he gave this very wide-ranging interview to Cosmo, and he talked about a lot of different things. One of them was why he chose not to date until his 20s. Sure, dude, couch that like it's a choice. That's fine. Another thing that he said was he was talking about, on the subject of dating, he started talking about like how women should get a man's attention. And a lot of people, and understandably so, were really angry with this because it was very old-fashioned advice, I thought personally. I mean, there were many things wrong with it. Let me read to you the quote, and then I want to hear from you about it, either at pro, con, advice you have, whatever. I want to talk about it because it's so ridiculous, right? Okay, this is what he said. He said, "The way to a guy's heart is through his hobbies. Find out what he's passionate about, and if you really love him, get into that too. If I meet a girl who can talk video games, guitar, cooking, or good books, it's a huge turn on. And lots of guys like to teach, so if you can get hands-on with learning, I'm telling you, you'll get there." Oh my God. There's so many. Let us pick this apart, shall we? Let us discuss the ways that I am taking issue with this, as did many people on the interwebs. Okay, first of all, the whole idea of like, go get a man's attention. How about he can come get yours? Right? Let's start there. I think it's a little old fashioned to be like telling women how to go get men. Also, it's to me, this whole quote is really encouraging women not to be themselves. It's saying like adopt interests that you may not actually have just to go get a guy's attention, in which case then you're stuck with a guy you have nothing in common with. And then what's your plan? Further, and I know this is a contentious issue and people get all bent out of shape about it. However, Ross Butler is 27 years old. And so for him to be talking about dating partners as girls, that presents a problem because I assume he means women, but I'm assuming he's dating women who are over 18. So you see where I'm going with this. He shouldn't be saying girls. He should be saying women unless he's choosing to date underage women. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Then, it's kind of, to me, it kind of also points out, and this has sort of like sparked some side conversation a little bit in the many areas online where people are upset about this quote of as if a woman couldn't be into those things on her own. Like you couldn't be into guitars or video games or books on your own. Like you'd only be into those things for a dude. And then to add insult to injury, the whole like teaching thing, like go get a guy to teach you this stuff. This is, I don't know what year it is, but oh my God, come on. It is not 1955 and we don't need to be giving out advice like that. So, but I want to hear from you on this topic because I think it is so cringeworthy. It's one of those like, easy to ignore because it's not that big a deal. And it's like, who is this guy anyway? But it's also, it sparked so much conversation on so many social media platforms. I cannot help but think, we got opinions about it. We got to talk about it. There are things. Okay. So again, 312-981-7200. We're going to take a little break when we come back. Let us talk about it. I want to hear from you. Back in just a bit. Amy Guth in for Brian Noonan here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Brian Noonan. Chilling with you today until 7 o'clock, hanging out, talking about all the things. You know, I got to say, I really enjoy doing fill-ins. I mean, anytime I can be here is always a joy. But, you know, why I do like the Business Lunch Show, which is very focused around business and economic stuff. And then I do Saturday Night Special, which I super love because we get to dig very deeply into a single topic for 2 hours with lots of super smart people and think about, you know, learn from them. And we all learn together from them. But I get all these other, you know, pitches for cool stuff that's going on. And I'm like, I don't have a place to put people. So when I do fill-ins, that's when I get to put all kind of cool other stuff on. And because it is Earth Day, we are going to be talking with Susan Mudd from the Environmental Law and Policy Center right here in Chicago. We're going to be talking with her in the 6 o'clock hour about a really interesting local story that is connected to the Volkswagen diesel settlement. It's really interesting and has a lot to do, lots going on with it right here in Illinois. So we're going to be talking with her all about that. And coming up at 5:30, we're going to be talking with author Emily Belden, who we have talked to before when her first book called 86, it was a memoir. It came out and we talked to her right here on this station about that very, very hilarious and wonderful book. And now she has written a novel. And so we're going to be talking with her about that. It is called Hot Mess and I highly recommend you read it. So we're going to be doing all that. But before we go to news, we were talking about this quote that I read it and kept swiping today. I was looking on my phone and I was like, that's so stupid. Who is that anyway? But this is what happened. So there's an actor from 13 Reasons Why, and he gave this interview on Cosmo about dating, and it's infuriated a lot of people. And I was quick to ignore it, but then I realized how many people in my social media networks were really angry about it. So I had to go back and kind of dig into it because there's a lot of things to be angry about with it. Essentially, he was giving dating advice. He was saying, like, you know, women, here's how to get a man's attention. Only there's a couple things wrong. Number one, he didn't say women, he said girls, and he's 27. So, like, be cool. Like, it's 2018. Be cool. Don't be saying girls. He was also basically saying, like, pretend, like, feign interest in hobbies in order to get a man's attention. So I just thought that was so ridiculous. Anyway, 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Let's talk about it. Or terrible dating advice that you have heard. I would love to hear it because I know we've all heard just ridiculous stuff from, like, people with good intentions and people with not so good intentions. So, esteemed producer Ben Anderson, what do you think about this quote? Do you think people are overreacting, or are you on board with the outrage? Uh-oh, I can't even hear you. There you go.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Yeah.
No, I'm on board with the outrage.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
You know, I'm a little bit older now and wiser, so I don't want to date a girl. I want to date a woman.
Right, because that, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I know people, like, my grandfather and I have had this conversation before, right? He would be like, oh, but it's, if someone calls you a girl, it's like, it's flattering, it's about youth. I'm like, right, but if you're over 18, can we just, like, you don't do that to men, uh-huh. Right? Like, once a guy is over, you know, once he's an adult, people, like, we don't say boy anymore. You just don't do that. Yeah. So don't say girl. Be cool about it. This is where texters start saying, like, horrible things about me for being a stick in the mud, but I don't care because it's the reality of the situation is once you're 18, you're a woman. So there's that. But then the part I think that there are two parts that really irk me to death. And one, I would love to hear your opinion about, Ben. One of them is kind of this idea of, like, feigning interest in hobbies, which I think is ridiculous because then you're stuck with a partner that you do not have anything in common with. But the other part is this line, and it says, and lots of guys like to teach. So if you can get hands-on with learning these, like, topics he's just listed, I'm telling you, you'll get there. That is such a problematic sentence because it's like, if you can be like, golly, I don't know anything about video games. Will you just teach me? Like, that's terrible and stupid. And you're walking in with this just goofy, you know, power imbalance. And there's lots wrong with it. Anyway, what say you?
I've always liked the route. I mean, for me,
yeah.
I like being able to do something with someone where we both get to learn together.
Right.
Because, yeah, I'm not a fan of, like, it's nice to have that balance of each other, like, teaching
sure. you
know, something, but I don't like it being one way. Because then I feel like I don't evolve as a person and right. in the relationship.
And also, like, what, I don't know, I just think that's so old-fashioned and silly, and the more I think about it, the more it drives me crazy. And, right, I hear that, right? It's like, hey, I don't know how to do this one thing, but you know, you trade skills when you're seeing someone, you know, you're like, mm-hmm. oh, you know, I didn't like this kind of music until you kind of introduced me to it. And likewise, you didn't like my kind of music and you, whatever, you pick up things or, you know, you didn't know how to cook or something like that. But, and you sort of, you skill share when you're dating somebody. But this idea of approaching a relationship with like, oh, golly, teach me things. It just sounds like so goofy. And I'm with you. I mean, I think, you know, like fun dates are ones where you can like go learn a dance or uh-huh. how to, I don't know, throw axes or like whatever.
You know, is. It's so funny you say that because at the last radio recess we did.
I missed here, that one. It was axe throwing.
No, it wasn't the axe throwing. It was the archery tag.
Oh, that's right. Two radio recesses ago. Which, if you don't know what we're talking about, there is a thing where all the hosts and everybody that works behind the scenes and in front of the microphone and just all of us, the whole WGN Radio family, we like go on this, we call them the radio recess, and we go do fun stuff. There's been, like there was one where we did roller derby. And I saw stars for like 3 days.
I missed that one.
It was over the summer. And I had a helmet on, but I hit my head quite hard. And really, at one point I was like, I was saying like, can y'all text me in an hour, make sure I'm still alive. It was that kind of thing. But anyway, so there was the archery thing.
Yeah. So we were there for archery tag, but apparently this company, think dodgeball, but with bows and arrows.
So you shoot people with the arrow?
Yeah, but I mean, it's got like this giant foam marshmallow tip thing.
Okay, so it's like Nerf bat situation.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But I mean, but it's a real bow and arrow, which is pretty cool. But what the instructors were telling us was that they do a lot of like open shooting and instruction and everything. So they do couples nights with this where you can go in with your significant other and learn to shoot bow and arrow.
But wait, do you shoot each other or do you shoot on the same team?
No, just like at targets, but okay. You get to learn together and they set up a date night there for it.
So that's a much better idea.
Yeah, something different to do that I never would have thought of.
Yeah, I mean, this whole quote, we're talking about this Ross Butler quote, if you're just tuning in, but this whole quote really boils down to authenticity to me because it's asking, what it's implying is that it doesn't matter what you are personally into. It's like if you have your sights set on somebody, go internet stalk them, find out what they're into, and become that person, which just sounds like a really lousy deal. And that would just, why would you want to date somebody who you're like, I've now been pretending to like whatever TV series for years because I really wanted to date this person. Like, well, if you don't have anything common, you don't have anything common. And mm-hmm. If you're not compatible, you're not compatible. And if you're, you know, so like if you're faking it, I just think that's a really terrible foot to start off on.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
But there is a lot. There are also some very hilarious tweets in response to this. So if you go on Twitter, it's in the Twitter Moments area, so you can find it very easily. But just search Ross Butler, and you will see the whole thing. And you know, you can see all the many responses where people took issue with all the aspects of it that I named. Many, many of them. But, you know, and rightly so, because I thought it was ridiculous. And again, I didn't really think it was that big deal, because honestly, I'd never heard of the guy, because I didn't watch that show. Never heard of the guy until I kept swiping through Twitter and realized how many people were angry about it. And then I was like, okay, there's something here. We'll talk about it. We'll get to the bottom of it. But here's my two cents. Just you do you, because the idea of like being in a dating situation with somebody under false pretenses sounds very lousy for both of you, because then they think they have, you know, found someone who shares their interests, and you have, like, I don't know, manufactured a personality to get a date. And let's not do that. Let's not project desperation. Let's just be ourselves, and everything will be okay. I'm sure of it. Okay. We're going to take a break and we're going to go to news. And when we come back, we're talking with author Emily Belden to hear about all the things she's up to, which is a lot of stuff. So more on that here in just a bit, here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth in for Brian Noonan today. Thanks for being with us. Always grateful to you for sharing part of your day with me. Okay, I promised you a very exciting guest, and I am here to deliver on that promise. We are joined in studio by the one and only Emily Belden. She is a Chicago-based freelance food writer, storyteller, and author. We talked to her a couple years ago about her first book. It was called 86. It was a memoir. It is very good. I recommend you get it. And we're going to hear about an interesting update with that. But she is here now to talk about her debut novel. It is called Hot Mess. It's got everything. All the good vices, right? It's got food. It's got drugs. It's got money. It's got all the things. Emily, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Amy. Thank you so much.
So tell us about Hot Mess.
So, Hot Mess, like you said, debut novel, so I guess that means it's out now. That was a book that took me about 3 months to write and 3 years to come out. So it's so crazy to see it actually in the real world, living and breathing and on CTA and seeing people read it in the real world. So Hot Mess, like you said, you sufficiently probably scared my mother with that description, but it's a little bit of drug, sex, and rock and roll. But basically, you know, I have a protagonist who's a young 20-something who is in social media, like all young 20-somethings seem to be, and she finds herself suddenly entwined in conversation online with an up-and-coming sort of bad boy celebrity chef, and the two of them kind of have this unexpected, tumultuous, destructive relationship, and he coaxes her into investing in his restaurant concept on our famed restaurant row, Randolph Street. But just before he's about to open that restaurant, he dips off with a little bit of an addiction issue and leaves her high and dry. So she basically has two choices. One of them is to, you know, say F it and move on, or just jump right in and figure it out. So it's a story about this girl who has to dominate her career and get her life back in order, and you know, it's a hot mess. So
yeah, and switch from social media into the restaurant world
totally,
very quickly.
Absolutely. Goes from zero to 100 with that whole thing.
So. I grew up in a restaurant house, so that part alone is so fascinating to
right.
me. I love reading about people working in restaurants just because I know that so many aspects of that for my own life.
Right. What I like about it, too, is that, you know, it's not a foodie book necessarily. Mm-hmm. Even though people like you who know the restaurant industry are going to be, they're going to love it because they're going to follow along. But, oh, I think I know where this is, or mm-hmm. I think I know who this is about. You know, that there's sort of a fun aspect to reading it like that. But the main character, like I said, goes from social media into the, you know, most cutthroat fine dining industry in the United States. And so those people who are not really interested in that, they don't have to worry about it. You won't get lost. You're not going to be alienated because you'll follow along with her journey and go, you know, and learn as she goes as well.
Mm-hmm. And so why this story? How did it find you?
So, you know, there's some autobiographical elements in there. When I was once in my younger 20s too, sort of did the thing with the hot bad boy chef. And there was one time that he brought me to a vacant restaurant space. And it was, I think it was in Wicker Park at the time. So it wasn't as high end as Randolph Street is. But I was like, why am I here? And I mean, there was like investors there, and there was a woman that was slated to be the quote general manager of this place. And I'm like, did I miss something? I mean, all I kept thinking is what, you know, am I here because he expects me to sort of chip in for this mm-hmm. or what, you know? And nothing ever happened from that. The only thing that did happen from that is I ended up becoming friends with that quote general manager that had already been picked out. So she's actually one of my really good friends today. And a few years later, her and I were just having some drinks at my pool talking, and I just simply said, oh my gosh, don't you remember when we were at that restaurant? Like, what if I invested in that? And she was like, oh, we'll tell you exactly what would have happened. You would have lost all of your money, he would have disappeared, and you and me would be working 80 hours a week sleeping at that restaurant trying to get your money back. That's mm-hmm. exactly what would have happened. And it was so casual, like that was it. But that was the moment that the book was born for me, because
sure.
it was just a simple what if question. And then I was like, wow, there's a lot of creative room to answer this question, and it's a very compelling thing. So
mm-hmm. And so what has that shift been from going from memoir to fiction?
It's been really fun and really interesting. I mean, obviously, writers write what they know. So I did the memoir thing. Like, I wrote exactly what my life was like when I was younger in my 20s, trying to figure things out. Date before Uber, date before Tinder, date before iPhone. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was actually a thing not that long ago. So, you know, I sort of got that out of the way. But then, like I said, I always want to write what I know. I want that authenticity to come through. So I had enough of a connection to this book to sort of get it going, to sort of get the base for it. But everything else after that was creating creating this world that didn't exist. And like I said, answering that what if question however I wanted to. So I could create characters that didn't exist, create situations that didn't exist. And for me, what I really enjoy about that is that, you know, readers read a book to escape, right? Mm-hmm. And right, like I do the same thing as a writer. I escape, but I get to actually control that world. And, you know, I don't have a lot of control in my daily life of just normal things. So to be able to sit down and open my computer and decide who is going to be saying what and doing what, you know, that for me does it. So
yeah. And what is your writing process like? This is my favorite thing to ask of writers. Yeah. Because I feel like there's people that have a very particular process, or there are people that are like, you know, it's on scraps of paper in line. It doesn't matter. And I would die if I had a process. Which are you in?
So it was funny because for this book, I really saw it in my head start to finish. It's such a devourable book. It just wrote itself and it reads just the same. So for me with this, it was a matter of just putting pen to paper. Like once that first sentence came off my fingertips, the rest would just flow. So I end most chapters on a real punchy kind of one-liner. And when I would do that, I would know, okay, I'm this one's done. It's kind of mm-hmm. like I put the little bow at the end. And before I would close the computer, I would write a few bullet points of what I knew needed to happen next. And then the next day or the next time I wrote, I just knew what I needed to accomplish. So it was kind of like just an ebb and a flow. But I also only really write at nighttime. My general rule of thumb is that if it's light outside, I can't do it. For some reason, I just, you know, I think what it is it stems from when I wrote 86. I was young. I had a full-time job. I was trying to also date and work out and do all those things. The only time I could write was like, you know, started at 9 o'clock at night. So I'm sort of classically conditioned to mm-hmm. like when the sun goes down, that's when I can be creative. That's when I could kind of pour a glass of wine and let it happen. So even if you gave me the whole day to do it, my writing process still doesn't really kick in till the nighttime. Fortunately, at this point, there's so much sort of business end of this kind of author thing that that can go on during the day. I can answer questions for writers and things like that, and review cover art for the next book. Those kinds of tasks can be done during the day. But as far as actually sitting down and putting pen to paper, I still can't do that until it's dark and quiet and I have that time.
Interesting. Do you write with music or are you silent?
Pretty much I'm a silent mm-hmm. person, which is so weird because I sit down when I write. I don't do it like, oh, I have a half an hour. I'll just get a, you know, I need like 6 hours at a time. So mm-hmm. if that is it, it's like sitting alone in a silent room for 6 hours. And, you know, I've had people that wanted to kind of document the process along the way. And I'm like, it's going to be so boring. It's going to be
you're
silent
gonna hate this.
And boring. There is nothing to see. There's nothing to do. I mean, it's just, that's the funny thing about like a writer. It's yeah. like you kind of close yourself off for an undisclosed period of time. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, a book. It's on the shelf. Here it is. So I don't think people realize what goes into it because it's so mental.
That's one of my favorite parts of Chicago, though. There are many, but one of them is that there's so many live lit events, because I think it's for that reason. Because as writers, you have to kind of scurry away, mm-hmm. block out the world, do your thing, and then it's kind of like, I haven't talked to another human being yeah. in days. I got to do something.
It's so true. And that's something that I wanted to get into, and I did. I started last June doing shows here and there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's nice about that is that these usually are like 5 to 7 minutes. I think the longest live lit show I did was maybe 10 minutes. But for me, it's like I sit down and work on a medium that's like 120,000 words at a time. So for me to take a break from that and talk out loud and deliver something that has a beginning, middle, and end in 5 minutes is like, oh, that is such a treat for me. And it keeps me like sharp. I can like, you know, tell a story in a succinct way.
So. Yeah. Definitely. We're talking with Emily Belden about her new book, Hot Mess. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we will continue this conversation right here on 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth in for Brian Noonan today. With you until 7 o'clock. We have been talking with author Emily Belden. She was here when her first book came out. It's called 86th. It's a memoir, the full title, 86th, a memoir about unforgettable men, mistakes, and meals. And I highly recommend that book very much. She is back now to talk about her debut novel, Hot Mess, which you should run do not walk, run and go get right away. But we've been talking about the writing process and the writerly world and all that good stuff. And I wonder about the reactions that people have had to it so far, and to maybe just to your writing in general that maybe surprises you.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, this book was written 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, to see it actually on a shelf 3 years later, you never know what you're going to get, right? So one of the cool things was that when the advanced reviews were going out, a lot of the advanced praise was talking about themes that I had no idea really. I mean, I had an idea they existed. I just didn't realize they were so front runner. So one example is, you know, people are like, oh, this is like a great women's empowerment, almost like a feminist intro. And I thought, really? And I mean, I guess so, but it definitely wasn't something like that wasn't a motivating factor in writing the book. But it's like, what it shows is like, you know, where we are in our culture today and the landscape of things, you know, what do readers want to pull out? And, you know, I think with things like the Me Too movement and Women's March and equal pay and all that stuff, you know, it makes it easier to pull those themes out today. I don't know if 3 years ago, if the book came out, if people would say that this is like a nice soft entry into the feminist world. You know, I don't know. So that's super interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of writing is that way, when our collective consciousness is raised a little, or when we feel maybe more, I don't want to say the word empowered, because I have a contentious relationship mm-hmm. with that word, but, you know, more open or more aware of calling something out or saying something. So it's like when you learn a word when you're a kid,
right,
and suddenly the word is everywhere. You can find themes in other spaces. So I think a lot of writing speaks to people in that way.
Yeah, totally. So that was definitely a cool one. I think another advanced praise talked about, this is the book that all entrepreneurs need to read. And I was thinking, okay, for sure. I mean, this really is, at the end of the day, I always look at Allie, my character, and think, this is just the story of a girl. It really is. It's just following along with some 20-something that got caught in something that she shouldn't have and has to get her way out of it. So I always look at it just kind of like this generic thing, and I didn't realize that there were so many key, like, very pinpoint themes that people mm-hmm. took away. With the entrepreneur thing, I guess, yeah, you know what? She does go into a business that she knows nothing about. It's incredibly cutthroat industry, obviously. Randolph Street is our famed restaurant row. And if you make it there, that's like Madison Square Garden in New York, right? So seeing a character go from zero to hero on that area of our restaurant map is, you know, I guess that is a very inspiring thing. And she's extremely strong-willed, so... And she figures it out. So I definitely was like, you know what? That's a spot on one as well. That again, though, when I'm writing this, those aren't the themes in my head that I'm like, I need to make sure I touch this point and this point and this point so that we get points for feminism, we get points for entrepreneurialism and all that stuff. So it's just very interesting. What does the readers today want to pull out? And then that's just, as a writer, being like, oh, aha, that's an interesting aha moment for somebody.
And probably if you sat down and thought, I have this agenda I need to promote in this book, it wouldn't have worked or wouldn't be picked up as obviously.
Another thing is, I mean, obviously you touched on, the book has some addiction issues mm-hmm. in it. And that's the character Benji, who's only really present in the first third of the book, but it sets a great base for what happens and why things are as, you know, crazy and destructive as they are. And I thought, you know, this is going to be one of those subjects that people are going to have a comment or an opinion about. And funny enough, the only people who have reached out to me from industry, you know, I thought if people reach out for me from the industry, they're going to be like, oh, this is actually not how you run a restaurant, mm-hmm. or this is not how much this, you know, iceberg lettuce costs, things like that. But people from the industry, the only thing that they have said to me was how I nailed the addiction aspect of Benji and of sort of the, of that kind of, you know, hush hush dark secret of the industry world. So for me, I was like, that makes me feel very good, because that's something that you need to get right. You know, you can't just sort of wing it like, oh, I think dating an addict would be like this, and just, you know, it's too much responsibility. It's too serious of a subject to just, you know, guess what that would be like and hope you got it right. So for me, to hear that back and be like, you absolutely nailed that, was, you know, I will take that for sure.
Has anybody in the Chicago restaurant community felt like it hit too close to home, or did someone think they were in the book who in fact is not, or something like that?
No, I haven't. And I mean, I fully was expecting that stuff, because I think that industry, I'm not in it, you know? Yeah. And I mean, I live over there and I walk by it every day, but I'm not someone that ever really got her hands dirty in there. So I was afraid for sure that, or at least I was expecting that would be some sort of feedback, but I have not received that at all, like, knock on wood. And chefs, the only chefs that have really commented one way or another, not even really in the Chicago area. It's been very well received in the Pacific Northwest and in LA and in Brooklyn. So hearing from people from complete other geographical locations that are in the industry, again, nothing but positive things to say about it.
Yeah. Well, again, the book is called Hot Mess. You should go get a copy right away. But I don't want to let you leave yet because I want to talk to you about, let's rewind back mm-hmm. to the memoir because mm-hmm. it has done many things and had many adventures since yeah. you were here last. Right. Tell us about that.
So the book, it got optioned for film for a developmental deal. So we are in the progress of that right now. Basically, what we're going to do is take the themes in that book and sort of break that into episodes, and we're going to work that into a digital series. So it's not going to be verbatim. It's not going to be, you know, verbatim with the things that happen in the book, but definitely the same vibes and sort of, like I said, themes of being in your 20s and trying to figure it out and having no clue how to do that. But that is going to be a digital series called All of the Nope, and I'm going to contribute as a writer on that. So that's a new form for me to write in. Again, it's not sitting down and cranking out 100,000 words at a time. It's, you know, 3 to 9 minute episodes, all dialogue, very punchy, very funny, and just authentic. So, you know, it's not going to be sort of that doom and gloom 20-something millennial mm-hmm. depression. It's going to be something that you can escape and laugh and... Yeah.
And it's so, I mean, it's that memoir for people who have not read it. It's little vignettes of dating.
Right.
And it's so, I mean, so many of them, you're like, oh, I've been there.
Right.
Like so many of them. And I think that's why people really attach themselves yeah. to that book. So will there be update in it to allow for like, dating apps and things like that that weren't included in that.
Yeah, exactly. I actually put out the most recent edition of that book just before Hot Mess came out, saying about February of this year. And there's some areas in there that we did clean up a little bit, just because what's funny is this content, I'm 31 now. And when I wrote the book, I was like 23, 24. And that's definitely like the target market age, like younger 20s. Mm-hmm. And it's just so funny because the older I get, the more it feels like, oh, my little sister wrote that or something. But it's still so relevant. You know, I still have these young 20-somethings that come to my book events and bring 86 with them and talk about 86 as they're being their Bible. And so, yeah, I think that there's necessary little updates that need to kind of go in there just to keep that book pertinent. Because the lessons in there, I mean, every chapter, even though it's something that kind of is cringeworthy, worst case scenario, I think what's cool about that book is that every chapter is a lesson learned. And, you know, there's a little bow at the end of that too. So it's not just, look how crazy my life was. It's like, what did I learn from that? And how can I pick up the pieces and move on? And I think that's what makes that book fun and interesting and so compelling to read.
Yeah. And then I have to wonder about kind of the opposite scenario in Hot Mess, mm-hmm. because here's someone who's working in social media.
Right.
And anytime we write about technology, there's always kind of a risk of will it be as readable in a couple of years that, you know, I think a lot of people struggle with as
yeah,
writers.
Little fun fact there, when we were just about to go to print, it was like final read, and I made the executive decision at the very last minute to update a couple of things. One of them was she made a comment about how she has to tweet something and she only has 140 characters and less. And I was like, I think we need to update that because it's 280 now. So I'm like, someone's going to read this and be like, this is old. It's already dated. It hasn't even come out yet. There was something I had in there about GChat. Mm-hmm. She was G-chatting with him. And they're like, well, G-chat doesn't exist anymore. It's called Google Hangout now. I'm like, well, I still call it G-chat. But I mean, if we're being technical, these things don't exist anymore. So, I mean, little things like that, before the book even went to print, we just were like, let's get this as current as possible so that it's not already behind the times by the time it comes out. So.
Right. I think that's always the struggle of including any kind of technology. And I think that problem only gets more dire as we go because technology moves so much faster.
Exactly. It's so insane to think that in a couple of years, like, will talking about Instagram be like passé? I mean,
right.
Who knows? I have no idea. So.
Right. Very, very interesting. And so what is next? What are you working on next? What's on the horizon for you? All that good stuff.
So when I sold Hot Mess to HarperCollins, they bought another book from me as well that wasn't written. It was just kind of a synopsis concept. It's called Husband Material. So that book is... First draft of that is due May 1st for me. So coming up here real quick, it will not hit shelves until 2019.
Okay.
But it's another novel, so fiction. This book is a little bit more complicated plot, a little more complex, but it's still extremely voice-driven. So, you know, the way I write is the way that I talk. It feels like I just sat you down and for a real long cup of coffee and was like, I have a story for you. So it's going to be like that, but the actual themes in it are a little bit of a departure from my comfort zone. It's not something that I super have, you know, firsthand experience with or anything like that, but it's been an exciting challenge, and I'm excited to get that draft out.
All right. Well, Godspeed. Yes. You've got that deadline looming over you. The book is called Hot Mess. It is by Emily Belden. And where can people go to find out more, buy the book, all that good stuff?
Book is at every Barnes & Noble right now. So if you prefer to go to a bookstore, head to any Barnes & Noble. And if you want to get it online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble as well. There's also a lot of independent booksellers that are local that are picking it up. I would just say give them a call before you go just to make sure they have it. Otherwise, they can certainly order it for you.
I was going to say, or demand that they carry it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for visiting with us today.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. My pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
All right.
We're going to take a little break, get you news, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Hello. It's Amy Guth in for Brian Noonan with you another hour. So, lots of things still to do here in this hour of the program. It is Earth Day, as I hope that you know. And so we are celebrating that. And a little bit later, I want to hear from you after the 6:30 news. And I want us to talk a little bit about how things you're doing in your life to celebrate Earth Day all year, not just today, because that's not going to cut it. We got to do it all the time. But right now we are joined by phone by Susan Mudd, who is a senior policy advocate at the Environmental Law and Policy Center, here to talk with us about a really interesting story. And that is that Illinois is on tap to receive $108 million from the $2.8 billion Volkswagen diesel settlement. Now, there's a lot of contentious stuff around there, right? Anytime we start talking about money, immediately, it's never straightforward. So here to talk with us about that, Susan Mudd, welcome to the program.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Nice to be with you.
Thanks so much for taking time out of your weekend to talk with us. So talk us through this story and kind of lay the groundwork for us a bit for those who may not be familiar with the story and all of its details.
Certainly. So, first of all, happy Earth Day.
Thank you. You too.
We finally got a gorgeous spring day finally for Earth Day. So the VW scandal is about the fact that VW installed what are called defeat devices, or what are now known as defeat devices, on thousands of cars sold in the U.S., including many in Illinois. Those defeat devices allowed a number of VW cars to emit up to 40 times the allowable limit of a certain pollutant called nitrogen oxides. Nitrogen oxides contribute to smog that we have in the summer, you know, that yellow-brown scum that hangs in the air and makes us all have trouble breathing, especially people with asthma or other respiratory diseases. The scandal of these defeat devices was dealt with through a lawsuit that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the California Air Resources Board took on against VW, and they were able, because of that scandal, to get money for a number of things. One was to recall those cars, to get those cars off the road. So those cars are being bought back from the people who were unwittingly purchased them, thinking they were clean cars. Secondly, VW gets to control a pot of money that will be used to fund electric vehicle charging stations along in some areas of the country, and we can come back to that. Chicago will get some electric vehicle charging stations through that pot of money. And third, each state in the U.S. is getting money according to the number of the cars with the defeat devices that were sold or registered in that state. So Illinois stands to get $108 million, as you indicated, Amy.
So of the $108 million, so the Illinois EPA right now is in the process of kind of deciding how those funds will be spent. And that's where it starts getting really interesting, where there's a lot more, perhaps a lot fewer, rather, options than we would think. It seems like a relatively narrow list, but it seems like they're trying to also narrow it kind of a bit more and really focus on where those funds are going to go. And then, so then enter the Environmental Law and Policy Center, who has things to say about that list. So take us through that part.
Okay. So you are correct, Amy, that the VW settlement has a limited list of things that the $108 million can be used for. And that is that's actually a good thing. The reason for that is that you and your listeners may recall the tobacco settlement of some years ago. And each state then got money, and some of the money was spent on things that had nothing to do with reducing tobacco use.
Right.
So the people who did this, who carried out this lawsuit, realized that if, in fact, we were going to mitigate or diminish some of the nitrogen oxide pollution from all these VW cars, we needed to not just let states spend the money any old way. So they came up with a list of 10 types of diesel vehicles and equipment that could be upgraded or replaced. And it's because all diesel equipment puts out diesel fumes, and diesel fumes includes this nitrogen oxide that I was talking about earlier, but also includes many toxic elements and substances which ride along with the soot particles in the diesel. You know, when you see a diesel bus or a diesel piece of equipment go by, you often see that it's got a dark plume, and that's the soot which carries along all these other toxins. So there's 10 allowable uses. It is clear from the settlement itself that the people involved understood that the best thing to do is to switch diesel out to electric. And the reason is that electric vehicles and equipment have zero emissions. So that the best way to reduce emissions is to go from diesel to zero emission electric vehicles. But they did give options. They gave options that are less polluting than diesel, but more polluting than electric, and those would be compressed natural gas, propane, or hybrids, hybrid of diesel and electric. And within that, they gave 10 types of equipment, ranging from trucks, transit and school buses, ferries or tugboats, ocean-going vehicles, which we don't have here in Illinois, airport equipment, forklifts, so those are the main categories. You are correct, Amy, that there are a lot of competing uses thus for the money. We did analysis at the Environmental Law and Policy Center, drawing on studies, and found that the best uses of the money here in Illinois would be in terms of protecting human health, reducing the amount of pollution, having the best costs overall over the lifetime of the equipment, and helping to change the markets towards electric vehicles would be to invest Illinois funds in school buses, electric school buses, electric transit buses, and what we call light-duty electric vehicle infrastructure, so charging stations. Those would be the highest priority uses of the funds. And not that all the funds need to be used that way, but those would be the highest priority items.
Right. And you know, the charging station part is such a key point, because I've heard so many people, this is just my own anecdotal addition here, but I always hear people say, well, I would buy an electric vehicle, I just don't know about the charging station. And I feel like that's it's anecdotal, but it's kind of a mental barrier. I think people believe they don't know where charging stations are, and therefore they don't even entertain the idea of an electric car, which is, you know, that's a problem if we're trying to move people to electric. So we have to take a quick break, though. We're talking right now with Susan Mudd, who is a senior policy advocate at the Environmental Law and Policy Center. We're talking about a very, very interesting aspect of the Volkswagen case, which I'm sure many of you remember, and how that is impacting decisions being made right here in Illinois, decisions she is part of making. So we're going to be right back and continue this conversation with her here in just a bit here on 720 WGN. WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth in for Brian Noonan today. Well, my friends, it is Earth Day, and so it is very important to talk about environmental issues all year long, but especially today, we must do so. And so we are joined by phone by Susan Mudd. She is a senior policy advocate at Environmental Law and Policy Center right here in Chicago. She has been on the program before, and we are thrilled to welcome her back. And we were starting a conversation about Volkswagen. You remember the big Volkswagen settlement? Lots of malfeasance happening, right? Lots of bad decisions being made. So after that settlement, there was a large sum of money. Illinois is on tap to get $108 million of that. And there is a lot of drama surrounding what is happening to that $108 million. And so Susan is here breaking that down for us and making sense of it all, which we really appreciate her doing. So Susan, I want to talk about a bit more in depth about the electric buses that we're talking about. And I also want to talk about the two bills introduced in the Illinois General Assembly. But first, I wonder, anytime we have big contentious issues like this, you know, we have lots of conversations and we throw around things like reaching across the aisle and things like that. But generally, and from your point of view anyway, what are people missing about this story? Or what are people getting wrong that's maybe choosing them to not, you know, or leading them to rather to not see the whole story or see it in the most, you know, productive light, in your opinion?
So the Illinois EPA came up with a draft plan for how to use Illinois' $108 million without any public input. And we believe that that was a big mistake. Last May, we were assured by the director of the agency that there would be public participation. There would be either meetings or hearings or around the state. None of those occurred. So there were a lot of, or some small number, relatively, number of private meetings that were held. The environmental community was able to be part of one such meeting. But really, the people of the state have not been heard in terms of what's most important to them to clean up the air quality in terms of reducing the pollution and protecting children and other vulnerable people. One of the things that is a result of not including the public is that, unlike most other states, Illinois is not putting the full 15% that it's allowed to put in for electric vehicle charging stations. We don't know why, but that's not in there. One of the other problems with the plan is that it allocates a huge amount, two-thirds of the money, for what are called off-road vehicles. That would be like locomotives. It's unclear why. In other states, the range is more like 15 to 25% of the money. It's unclear what Illinois EPA is assuming and why. So that's a concern. There is one very good part of Illinois' draft plan, which I do want to highlight, and that is that the Illinois EPA allocated 10% of the funds for electric school buses. That is something that we very much support, and I'd like to just explain why.
Yeah.
Children are among the most vulnerable to air pollution. That's because children's lungs are still developing, and they breathe faster than we adults do. And diesel school buses, which is what over a million Illinois children ride to school every day, Illinois school children are exposed to these diesel fumes every day. And although a school bus ride isn't that large of a portion of one's day, maybe 10% of the day, it's responsible. That riding on that diesel school bus is responsible for almost a third of the soot and particulates their child will be exposed to. And those are strong contributors to asthma, which is the number one chronic disease among children now in our country. And in Illinois, affects, you know, about 10% of children. And in some parts of Chicago, where many of your listeners are, it's up to 1 in 2 or 1 in 3 children in neighborhoods. So it's really important that we get children onto cleaner school buses. Electric ones are the way to go because they're quieter and they have zero emissions.
And so the Environmental Law and Policy Center had a demo electric school bus that was touring around, I think, 5 or 6 states. And what were the results and conversations that were impactful and that came out of that?
You're right, Amy. Last June, we had a tour that started in Chicago. At one of our CPS elementary schools, and it went through 4 states. It went from Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. And everywhere that this electric school bus went, there were people who were interested to see it, were amazed at how quiet it was, were amazed at the quality of the ride, that there were no fumes. And we had public health officials speak out in favor Utilities supported, electric utilities supported this, and of course, school officials and parents and children. What's happened as a result is that there's been a greater awareness of the possibility of electric school buses. Beforehand, there haven't been that many yet on the road, and so many people, including many officials who would be allocating the funds, hadn't seen them. And there's still not yet enough awareness of them. So we're really glad to be able to have that tour. It helped in Ohio, where the Ohio EPA set aside $3 million for electric school buses in its VW plan. And we are optimistic that given the really organized efforts going on in Michigan with the Association of Pupil Transportation, as well as the state agencies there, we're cautiously optimistic that there will be money set aside in Michigan's plan as well. So between Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, we could end up with a really robust number of electric school buses in the Midwest to help to transform the market and to get children into safer buses and to help that transformation nationwide.
Yeah, and that number, I'm still stuck on the number of how about asthma that I knew it was such a big issue for children. I didn't realize it was quite that significant that many children were dealing with asthma. What is the cost issue associated with this? Because I know a lot of times when we're making upgrades for the greater good and for health in mind, pushback often comes down to dollars. What is the cost comparison of the electric school buses as opposed to the traditional ones that we have now?
Good question. So right now, because there aren't very many electric school buses yet on the road, the cost is significantly higher. A normal new diesel school bus is approximately $100,000, and a new electric school bus at this moment is about $300,000. However, they are cheaper to run. The fueling costs of going to electric are about, you cut the fueling costs by about 40%. And there are strategies to bring down the upfront cost. One thing is that if a school, for instance, was going to pay $100,000 for a diesel bus, it could put the $100,000 towards an electric bus. VW funds could be used to match that. And other funds could be used to help to bridge the difference. For instance, in Minnesota, a utility there, Great River Energy, it came up with a one-third cost, and they've done a pilot that way. And there are other possible strategies. And the other thing, Amy, is that as there are more electric school buses on the road, which there will be in short order, because now all the major school bus manufacturers now either have electric school buses on the road, like Lion, and Bluebird has them as of this year. And the other two major manufacturers in the U.S. Have also had concept vehicles that were shown last year. So as there are more of them, the price will come down, as it does with other things. You know, when there are more of them out there, the price will come down.
Right.
So we expect and hope that they will become closer in price in the near future.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I do want to check in about some of the legislative pieces of this, because I know that's something you've been very involved in.
So, Amy, there are a couple of bills that are pending in the legislature that have been introduced in the legislature now looking at VW. One, and the VW monies that Illinois has, tries to get the Illinois EPA, or would require that the Illinois EPA set up a task force so that the agency hears from the broad spectrum of Illinois residents who have not yet been heard from and who have not had a full opportunity to learn about the VW settlement, to learn about the options, and to put in their two cents as to how that money should best be spent. The other bill also tries to focus Illinois EPA on spending money on electrification as opposed to dirty polluting diesel and continuing the old ways that we've had by just doing very, very, very minor upgrades of diesel equipment. So we are optimistic that the legislature will let the agency know that it's time to hear from more people, and it's time to really look forward and look towards electrification. I wanted to mention one other thing related to this action now, Amy, which is the Illinois EPA had a very short window for public comment on its draft plan, which unfortunately closed Friday, 2 days ago. But residents of the state can still call Governor Rauner and let him know their views, because he, after all, is the boss and can direct the Illinois EPA to be more thoughtful in its plan. Governor Rauner's Chicago office number is 312-814-2121 for any listeners who are able to call and let the governor know their opinion about how VW funds should be spent here in Illinois.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Susan Mudd, Senior Policy Advocate at Environmental Law and Policy Center. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Amy. Take
care. All right, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth in for Brian Noonan today, with you till 7 o'clock. So it's Earth Day, and we were just talking with our friends at the Environmental Law and Policy Center right here in Chicago. Always interesting to check in and see what they're up to. But it's Earth Day, so of course we're going to check in with them. So there's lots of stuff I pulled together. I cobbled together a list, Roger. That's what I did.
You cobbled like one who makes shoes. You cobbled together.
I'm a cobbler of internet stories. I found this really cool list, and it got me thinking, and, you know, it's easy to go down the rabbit holes of things on the interwebs.
Sure.
So I found this cool list of things you did not know that you could recycle.
Ooh, okay.
It's because we all think about, here's the thing. This is Chicago, and we all know every time we put things in the blue bin, we're like, does it really get recycled?
I know in one place it doesn't.
Right, because
I'm not going to say where that is.
Mired in controversy, right? Indeed. Yep. But okay, so here's one that I will add to this list, and that is I just found out you can recycle unused or expired contact lenses.
What? Really?
Yes. In fact, some of the manufacturers have like a program where you can, you can print out like a shipping label. Mm-hmm. They'll take them for free. Send them right back, and they will, you know, just reuse them, break it all down and reuse the materials.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's recycling.
Which is useful for me because I feel like every 10 minutes my prescription changes and I need new eyewear, and I'm like, oh no, I see fine.
Sure.
So that's a cool one. Here is one I did not know, and that was you can recycle carpet. If you are changing the carpeting in your home, you can recycle. You don't, because I always see it in the dumpster.
Right.
And you think of it as being like, you don't change carpet that's awesome and clean and wonderful. You change carpet when it's cruddy. But there is the advice is out there that it just takes up so much space in landfills.
Sure.
So there are carpet reclamation facilities. So Google that and you will find the one closest to you. A carpet reclamation facility.
I like that.
And many times I had to go do a little digging on them. Sometimes they will break it all down, sanitize it, turn it into new fibers for other carpet. But sometimes it's completely other stuff. Sometimes it'll be melted down to parts, and like all kind of cool stuff can come from that.
Well, then the word has to get out to those who come in and take out your old carpet to put in a new one, so that they're not the ones dumping it into the dumpster.
Right.
It's either up to you to say, just put those outside, don't throw them in the dumpster, I'm calling a recycling place, or make sure the person putting in your new carpet does recycle.
See, I think part of it is much more convenient to rip up the carpet and throw it out in the dumpster than it is to like, okay, maybe I'll have to roll it in plastic and walk it over to the UPS store. Like, that sounds like a pain in the butt, and no one's going to do that. And I think that's a barrier to a lot of recycling efforts, is you got to make it easy for people. Mm-hmm. You know, even like the coffee pods, like Keurig or like Nespresso has a big recycling program, and they'll give you a bag with a prepaid label and you just have to like drop it off at a UPS center. But, you know, they make it very easy, but people that don't make it easy. And also carpet is a lot bigger than coffee pods.
And heavier.
Although I did, as we're saying this, I'm thinking of in my alley about a week ago. There was this gorgeous, beautiful, fancy rug rolled up out there. And I saw it from afar and I was like, ooh, look at that. That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Mama could use a new rug in the house, right? And I could see a note on it. And a lot of times people put things in the alley that just say, like, you know, free to good home.
Sure.
Or if it's a TV, it'll be like, works fine. Just bought a new one. I got closer to it. And it was like, got a new puppy. Pick up at your own risk. So I was like, okay, I'm going to not get that one.
Yeah, see, sometimes it's a healthy need to replace carpet. So not only is it heavy and there's a lot of it, but who knows what's lurking within it?
Right. I mean, that's a thing. Like, pets aside, like, you want to hit that with a black light because you don't know. You don't know what's occurred with all that. So there's that. Okay. Other things on the list of 30 amazing things that you did not know you could recycle, because some of the things actually should not be on this list because they're things we knew we could recycle, like cardboard boxes. Duh.
Oh, yeah.
We know that. We just have to break the box down, unlike my next door neighbor, who I always break the boxes down for.
Don't tell me they throw the box in the garbage can still fully formed.
No, they just put the full box still put together. They just like throw it in the alley next to the cans, and then it will rain, and because they're not going to pick it up if it's like that. So it's like right now it's a pile of boxes.
I hate that.
I know. So I go out there.
How hard is it?
I know.
You
I go out there with my keys
one side
and do
of it.
I know. Just keep going. And also, you like the Amazon shipping label is on it, so I know who it belongs to. I know it's yours. So, like, I know who to direct the dirty looks to. Okay. CDs. That's on the list. You can
the CD case or just the CD?
The whole thing.
Oh,
But particularly the CD, because I think people think the CD case would be more obvious. But no, the CD, you can, in fact, recycle that.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
See, this one I think is controversial. So, fluorescent light bulbs, I know that you cannot put them, like, straight up in the blue container. But IKEA will take them. IKEA will take... They actively collect fluorescent light bulbs for recycling purposes.
Oh, they're the only ones?
No, but they're, you know, that's a popular location where millions of people flock every weekend. So.
You would think that every hardware store in the country would do that for you. Because you can go to hardware stores and buy light bulbs. They got tons of displays
and
everything.
I'll bring you my old bulbs.
Exactly.
You can take, right. Maybe.
Now, you know, the electric company... And I don't know if they still do this, but in the old day, long before you were around.
Says you.
Thank you. you used to be able to bring in your old light bulbs and exchange them for new ones at the electric company.
Yeah, no, that's not a thing.
It's not a thing now anymore?
No. Oh, gee, no.
All right.
No.
Interesting. And that was a form of recycling before we called it recycling.
Right. Yeah. And let me tell you, and if you have like a recycling thing or something you've done at home that has helped the earth, give us a call. Tell us about it. 312-981-7200. We'd love to chat about that. But here's the thing that, like, let me talk about this is really an exercise in my own laziness, Roger, is what this is. But so I have...
Cleanse your spirit.
I know. I have to confess this. So I bought there's many varieties now of the, you know, the eco bulbs now that last for years and years, right?
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I bought the ones that were on sale because, let's be real, none of us got into this business for the vast riches associated with it.
Well, I thought I did.
So I bought the ones that were on sale and I was like, wow, this is a big sale. I'm going to buy the big box of lights because I have lots of, you know, lamps and stuff, but I also have the like ceiling.
The overhead,
light.
Sure.
Yeah, the overhead. Mm-hmm. And my ceilings, I'm tall. I'm almost 6 feet tall. But even standing on...
Tippy toes?
Yeah. On top of my kitchen chairs.
No. Careful.
What's
careful.
All I have? That's the thing. I don't have any storage, so I don't own a ladder. I don't have anywhere to put it. So I stand on my chairs. Even then, I'm little bit, it's really a lot of drama for me to change light bulbs, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
So I get all the light bulbs changed because I, you know, waited until several of them had burned out.
And you could barely see them.
Until the point it was like, okay, it's 8 p.m. and I've just lit a candle to maneuver around my apartment. So I change all the bulbs and I go in and turn and I didn't get the warm, glowy ones.
Oh, like the daylight ones?
I got
the soft, soft, soft white ones.
I got the light blue fluorescent. They look fluorescent. They're not, but they look.
I gotcha.
It looks like I'm in a hospital. And
oh,
I was
no.
like, oh, but they were so inexpensive. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'll wait for them to burn out. And then I was like, no, these are going to last like 11 years. Oh, my God. So now I've got to like, it's so stupid. But I was like.
So you know what you do?
I did the right thing, and this is how I'm being punished. Yes.
Yeah. So leave your lights on 24/7. They'll burn out real fast. Use up the whole box. You will feel like you've done something good by saving the ecology, and you've used up your savings, and now you'll learn better the next time.
Our friends at the Environmental Law and Policy Center were just tweeting that they were listening to the show. So right now they're like, you know, we thought she was our ally. We hate her now. And that baddish, too.
Wait a minute. I didn't buy the light bulbs. I buy the right ones.
I bought the eco-friendly ones. Yeah. You're the one telling me, like, leave them on. Well, use 11 years of a light bulb
eco-friendly.
In the next year.
They're eco-friendly. Just because they'll burn your eyeballs out.
I'm just going to keep my lights off and use candles.
Oh, there you go.
And let the next tenant deal with it. That's
a little
my
mood
plan.
Lighting.
That's what I'm going to do. No, it is literally the opposite of mood lighting.
With the candles?
No,
with the light bulbs.
Yeah, the light bulbs in my apartment are the literal opposite of mood lighting. Like, were I to bring a date to my apartment, it would be
they
like.
They would put scrubs on.
You know what? I'm gonna peace out because this is the opposite of romance. So I'm going to go is what would happen right now. So. But we digress. We're going to take a break is what we're going to do. When we return, we're going to keep talking about Earth Day, things you can recycle, things you should be recycling, and strategies to make your home a bit greener. Not just Earth Day, but all year long. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, you know, before we return to our Earth Day discussion, let me remind you that you can win a family four-pack of White Sox tickets Monday morning between 8:30 and 9 with Steve Cochran right here on 720 WGN. That is a thing you want to do because who doesn't want a family four-pack of White Sox tickets? A bunch of people went, Cubs fans, just now at their radios. That's a thing that's real.
I want them, but I can't win them.
I know, right? We're ineligible for all the cool stuff. Indeed. So it's Earth Day, and we have been talking about strategies to make your life a little bit greener. Roger and I may have had some tangents about poor choices I've made.
Wait a minute. Wait, how did I get? No, I didn't.
You were
do
part
the
of the discussion. So anyway, we have a caller. So be nice. Like, bring your manners, Roger. It's
yes,
good.
Ma'am.
So we have a caller, and it is Tracy from Hinsdale. Hi, Tracy. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, Amy. How are you? Good to speak with you again.
Lovely to speak with you. What can you tell us about Earth Day?
Well, pretty much, I recycle two things. Oh, and happy Earth Day. I recycle the coffee and sugar pours, those containers.
Mm-hmm.
And what I usually do after I'm done with the plastic containers, I take the wrapper off, put my own decoration on them, and use them for different things, wash them out in the inside real good.
You mean like coffee
use
cans?
Them for different... No, the plastic pour containers, like those Domino sugar containers.
Oh, yeah.
With the little tab on it that you pull.
Mm-hmm.
Some have the screw-off tops.
Oh, yeah, you can put all kind of stuff in there.
Yeah, all kind of stuff like flour, coffee, even more sugar.
Just refill with more sugar, right.
And the second is the coffee cans, the usual coffee cans. That when I'm done with them, I use them as flower pots. Put more soil in them and use them as flower pots.
Yeah, you know what I do? Those little bitty tomato sauce and tomato paste cans, I clean them out, and I'll start little seedlings in there because I'm a big plant person.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
yeah, those are good ideas.
Little seedlings are really good.
Yeah.
So make sure you put fresh soil in it and use it for seedlings.
Because I'm always like giving out my plants, right? Sorry, what's your other thing you do?
Yeah. And lastly, I usually take wood. You may find wood that people have thrown away. I usually make sure that the wood, those wood planks, usually make sure that they're not rotten or anything like that. Make sure they're nice and clean. I usually saw them and create maybe like a cabinet or little shelves for my house.
Oh, isn't you're so handy. How nice. I have nowhere to saw anything, and I'm sure that my neighbors would be infuriated if I started sawing things in the alley, but I like your style, and I like that reuse. And, you know, like, reclaimed wood is big business. Like, people on Etsy and all kind of places make beautiful things out of reclaimed wood.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well,
I'm so... You just have to make sure, Amy, that they're nice and clean and not moldy or dirty or any insects in it or anything like that.
Because you do not want to be building something and have a bunch of bugs.
You really don't.
That will really ruin your day. Well, thanks so much for the call, Tracy.
Thank you. You have a good weekend.
Thanks. You
and
too.
And a good new week coming up.
That's right. You do the same.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's a good strategy. So, Roger, are you handy? I don't think we've ever talked about that.
Hand, like construction handy?
Yeah, you build
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, sure I do.
Oh,
I build desk, shelving, whatever I can do. Yeah. I like working with tools. I like, building things. I'm not an expert at it. It's taken me decades to learn to measure twice and cut once.
I can just imagine you, like, swearing up a storm for cutting something too short.
And then doing the dumbest thing, instead of, like, admitting your mistake, going back and trying to fix it again, like, you know, getting more wood or whatever. I will force it to fit.
Oh, Roger.
Yeah, I know. Roger. I have some very wobbly desks and shelves. People walk in and go, who the heck made that? Yeah. And I proudly say, I did.
Yeah. See, I like doing that kind of stuff. I just don't have the space to do it because I, you know.
Actually, when I was teaching, I did a lot of construction because I built several radio stations and TV stations. So they would, like, put in the furnishings like desktops and stuff, but I would then have to go in based on the equipment we then got and drill holes and hang things and wire stuff and drill through walls in order to do all the wiring and put all the equipment in.
Well, as we head over to our new home across the river, perhaps you could help them get everything sorted out.
Yeah, I'm not union.
Oh, right. That's right.
Not that union.
You're not the right union.
No.
That's right. Well, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to find out what's happening in the next hour. So back here in just a bit on 720 WGN. And we'll forego the music. We'll just come right back and say hello.
You want me to sing?
Oh, will you sing for us, Roger?
Okay, that's enough.
Yeah, that is enough of that, in fact. That is quite enough of that, in fact. Well, it is time for me to relinquish the wheel and turn it over to Karen Conti. Hello.
How are you?
How's
it's
it good going? To see you. Good. We never cross paths
we
here.
Never do. But it's really nice to be in the same studio
indeed,
with you.
Indeed, indeed. So what do you have coming up on the show today?
We are talking to Brendan Max, who is the head of forensic science at the Public Defender's Office. And there's all kinds of new developments in DNA. Like, did you know you could take a little tiny bit of DNA and people can do a composite sketch of what somebody looks like? That's not quite, you know, it's pretty good.
Wow.
And then it was the 25th anniversary of the Waco siege in Texas. Remember
it's hard
that?
To it's imagine hard that was 25 years ago.
Remember that was 51 days of standoff. Yeah. And so we're talking to a hostage negotiator who goes around the country and does this kind of stuff and talks people off the ledge. And we're going to do a little mock hostage negotiation.
That's cool. I feel like those are skills we should all have because we could use them in our lives.
And that's absolutely right, because the listening and the empathy and all of those things are things we should be, you're right, doing in our daily lives.
We could use it for good, not evil.
It's exactly right.
Because we don't want to manipulate anybody.
No, no.
But we could, I feel like there, you know, there's some times where you're in a stressful situation.
Yes.
Or, I mean, I think you'd even use that with, like, parenting.
Business negotiation.
Yeah.
I mean, there are books written by these people that really deal with the business people of the world. Yeah.
I like it. All right. Well, I'll keep listening then. And you should
Thank
do
you.
The same,
Have
everybody.
A lovely evening.